This podcast is a presentation of UCTV.tv, University of California Television. Like what you learn? Help others discover UCTV podcasts by leaving a comment or rating in iTunes.
I always look for a project that's going to really terrify me. I feel music right away, but I don't know how I'm going to do that. And that's an exciting place for an artist to be, is I think I can do that. I don't know how I'm going to do that. And so when Terrence first suggested a story, he wanted to write a modern-day Medea based on the Susan Smith story of the woman that put her kids in the car. And like, I was like,
oh my God.
Terrence, I don't want to write that. I was like, I don't want to live there for 3 years. You know, an opera's going to take 3 to 4 years of your life to write. And I said, what about something completely the opposite? What about something original that has great heart, that has the opportunity for great laughter? I would love to write something that makes an audience laugh and then makes them cry in the next moment. And his eyes started to sparkle. And I thought, he's got an idea of what we're talking about. And lo and behold, very shortly after that, he started this invention that became Great Scott.
Rosa Dolorosa, figlia di Pompei. Opera tragica in 2 atti di Vittorio Vanzetti, Napoli, il 4 luglio, the 4th of July.
This is an opera company in trouble, and Arden Scott, this celebrated mezzo, has brought this piece.
She discovered this opera, Rosa Dolorosa, when she was in St. Petersburg. It was a dusty old score that they'd found at the back of a drawer in a cabinet. Instead of coming with a new opera or with a famous classic, she's chosen to bring something that's never been performed, that's 200 years old. And the whole question, one of the central questions throughout the whole opera is, does any of this matter? Does it matter to do a 200-year-old piece? Is there merit in doing that and in doing a piece that was never performed? Is there merit in doing a new piece? Is there merit in doing Rigoletto again? You know? Sure. And I think that's the essence of the piece, is the sacrifices and choices we make for dreams. I think everyone can relate to that story, whether you're in the theater or not.
Mm-hmm. Jake Heggie and Terrence McNally have written about our world. And in it, they have put all our vicissitudes, all our frailties, all the ludicrousness, all of the impetuosity, all of the jealousy, all of the rage, everything. Too much. There's really too much. We learned this, and we're now compressing it.
Great Scott is a profound opportunity for everybody in it, because guess what? It's about us. It's not about Lithuanians in the 14th century. It's not about Italians in Algiers. It's not about anything but a contemporary opera company surviving. And everybody on stage knows what that feels like. So the trick is, don't act. Be. Inhabit. Believe. And they're all responding with alacrity, I'm happy to say.
He's one of those people that he stands up in a room and explains what he wants to get out of a scene to the entire chorus, and everyone is awestruck after he finishes this 10-minute long description that was unplanned, but he's just, his use of words and his ability to capture the essence of a scene, of what he wants the scene to be, in such a beautiful way. I think we're all spellbound by him. I know I am.
Leslie Stahl came to do this thing. Lovely Leslie Stahl. She's a dear woman. She doesn't understand that you have to leave. She's a little bit in love with him. Everybody outside the business is a little bit in love with us. And they must be dissuaded from believing.
I have had in both Dallas and in San Diego the happy occasion of extremely sophisticated acting talents who happen to sing like angels, but they think of themselves as acting singers, not as a special breed.
The ability to get rid of the coffee is I need to do 2 things. Make the magic happen, but why am I holding a Starbucks? Will somebody take the Starbucks? You're the star. No one's going to take a Starbucks from you. No? No. Somebody finally will. The minute it's gone, go there. And you should stay focused on it. because suddenly the reason you're here is that music. What a privilege. She's going to say that in a minute. What a privilege. What an entrance, and what a privilege.
It's a warning from the Lord.
Arden Scott is a fascinating character. I think most opera singers in some level can relate to her aspects of her personality and aspects of her life as a performer. And she's basically a superstar who's arrived at this pinnacle point of her career where the world is at her feet. And I think she's sort of at the point where she's saying, okay, now what? What's next? What's the next level? She's presenting this before performed opera from the 1800s that she found, and she wants to present it at her hometown opera company to help them out with, you know, some financial strain that they're under at the time. And she thinks that it's going to just be a wonderful homecoming, that, you know, she's going home, she's loved in the town, and it would be an easy job because it's an easier audience. But instead what happens is going home raises up all kinds of demons and issues, unresolved issues from her past. She sees her ex-boyfriend. She's with her mentor. So parts of the deeper person, who she is, who she was as a child, are now coming up to the surface and causes a lot of conflict for her. It's a big, long sing, so you have to be safe with the way you use your voice, but you also have to be incredibly honest, I think, in this role. It's not going to work if it's not coming from a sincere place. I think also maybe playing an American opera, a modern American opera for an American audience requires an element of deep sincerity.
Bravo, Miss Scott! It's Arden!
Tatiana Marks.
Tatiana Bakst, in this opera, she's the young, up-and-coming, new talent, and she knows it. And she was brought over by Arden. So she's covering Arden in the opera, and she has her role as Agrippina in the opera within the opera. And she's interesting because she goes through this huge journey where at first she just wants to prove how good she is and how talented she is, and she wants to be the biggest star, bigger than Arden. And by the end of the opera, she's realized that it's not about her, and it's about the music. So, yeah, she's a firecracker.
Once a month, the national anthem. We'll know a national anthem. What I can sing in his age. Yes, I'm sure you can, but our chin is too high, too low, too fast, too low, too slow.
The Star-Spangled Banner is so unbelievably written that you just have to do what's written and execute.
The Star-Spangled Banner, national anthem, quiz variation.
Do I need this?
I've never sung the Star-Spangled Banner ever. Being Canadian and Lebanese, I've sung those anthems, but I've never sung the Star-Spangled Banner. And so this is my first public performance. And so with the variations, it makes it really, really interesting because it's so florid and there's so much to do vocally. But it's so in line with who Tatiana is because she's such a show-off. She really takes it seriously. She is doing the best rendition of the Star-Spangled Banner she possibly can.
Work in opera or theater, you probably don't know that a stage manager, in essence, runs everything. You know, they call cues, they call lighting, they call all these. So he's in charge of so much that happens on the stage, but he's one of these people that the characters rely on in one way or another. So it's a very fun role, and for me, it's meaningful to represent all of these people that work backstage. You know, we work with dressers and makeup artists and all of these people who help us become these characters. And yet, though we see their art and we experience the benefit of it, we don't get to know who they are. And that's what's so wonderful about this role.
Next month, turn up, we'll turn up.
Terrence McNally, when he was writing this, was at first thinking that maybe the stage manager would be transgendered, and so somehow out of that came the idea of a countertenor. Then they scrapped the idea of having him be transgendered, and then they decided, well, we'll keep the countertenor thing. And when I met Jake Heggie, the composer, I was performing at the Met, and he came backstage, having seen the performance, at the suggestion of a mutual friend of ours, and said, I think maybe, and I said, I love your music, you know, whatever you want. And somehow it all fell into place.
Forward is the only way it goes. Maestro, gotta keep your finger on the pulse of God's coming.
I know you may have heard Michael Jackson or the Bee Gees or Prince or all of these men who sing in their falsetto voice. And that's essentially what we're doing. We're just doing the operatic version of it. So it's a thrilling and strange experience for a first-timer to the countertenor voice.
I want you not to help the comedy. I want you to justify it. So that it's the same world. That's slightly different. We didn't really think about that. And now we have to. We have to struggle to do it. Because you can say this about any opera of this period. Come on. Oh, come on. And when we get to the end, where suddenly you're my daughter, you're my mother, all that sort of stuff, you know, it's really ludicrous. Unless it's real.
I'm fascinated by choruses in opera because, to be honest, they're very often ignored. They're expected to make a gorgeous sound and to get on and off with a minimum amount of effort. But people don't usually talk to them. Years ago, when I was doing an Aida in Houston, we were in the middle of the triumphal scene, and I asked everybody, did they know what side of the war they were on? And they were absolutely blank. And to the consternation of the general director, I made them all sit down. And I said, this is the story you're telling. There are two sides to it. Which side are you on? Who do you care about? Well, the management was appalled because I was wasting time. But the chorus was delighted because they thought, oh, somebody really cares about what we're doing.
My favorite moment in this opera, the duet between Arden Scott and Winnie Flato. The old voice teacher sitting at the piano. This piece is very special to everyone that's in this industry because there's some moment or moments that just relate to your life. And it's a very special piece. It really is.
We practice. We practice. And tomorrow practice some more.
Obviously, as a mezzo-soprano, she was one of my greatest mentors who I never had met in my life. Just the nicest person. I mean, nice is just not such a great word because it's so generic, but she really sincerely is nice, like kind and good and empathetic and so helpful to all the singers on stage. You can tell that she's really wanting the best for us and wanting us to do well and so supportive.
Great Scott was, I think, conceived as an opera that was going to be for Joyce DiDonato, mm-hmm. who is a dear friend of of his and of Terence's, and probably one of the greatest artists of our time. And they put their heads together, and Terence and Jake are a pretty magic combination. Mm-hmm. And so it evolved from there. And Jake has repaid me so many times for believing in his work that I never expect to be cast in anything or asked. I only was a little disappointed I wasn't cast as the whale in Moby Dick. Only slightly. I forgave him that. So when he called me and said, would you do this part of Winnie Flato, who is the owner of this opera company, as I told you, yes. And I just have treasured every experience, getting to be with beloved Joyce every day, getting to be with Jake, and now with this extraordinary cast.
Go, Christmas, go, go, go!
Because we've become such visual creatures and we're used to visual stimuli in a much greater amount than previous generations, there's an expectation that we would bring video into the realm of storytelling. And now, just in the 20 years I've been doing it, you would never see a playwright or a librettist be writing in the concept of projections, where now you do. And that's only been in the past, for me, the past 10 years or so, where the script actually calls for projections and lines or makes reference to suggestion of projections. And I think just especially in the U.S. and in Europe, it's part of storytelling. You expect to have the visual context of projections. I look at the design process much like detective work. The script for me is a series of clues, if you will, and the discussion with the director, the discussion with the set designer, the lighting designer, the rest of the design team is where you're gathering more information to solve the mystery of what this show is going to be. Each design problem gets solved in its own way. That's my favorite part.
The wonderful thing about Jake is that he's always writing with the audience in mind. He knows that he has a job to do, which is to tell a story and have these wonderful musical moments. the style that Jake had in Moby Dick is definitely in Great Scott, but since this is an opera within an opera, Jake has mastered the styles of Donizetti, Bellini, and Rossini. So it is really quite extraordinary to see this magician, this composer, really, because the story deems it and is necessary, to delve into 19th century music while still, at times, most of the time, being in the realm of Jake Hagee. He's not there to prove a point. You know, some composers are there to educate. Jake is there to share a heartfelt moment or a very funny moment or just to support this wonderful story. People are hungry to have stories told, our stories told, American stories told, in the American sound, in the American vernacular, by American artists. And it's very exciting time, I think it is.
And it's our job, basically, to fill our lungs and sing out Louise to make sure it's heard.
We're not phoning this in. We're singing for our lives.
This is a story of great people, very real people, very true people, very honest representations of people. And it's a thrill for me to see Jake's work translating to sort of to everyone. It doesn't just belong to one person. And it's been extraordinary. And this girl, Kate Aldrich, where all our jaws are dropped, she's amazing.
Yep.
It's what you all are just going to love this opera.
You've been listening to a podcast by University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at uctv.tv.